You're listening to Destiny Down Under, a Star Wars Destiny competitive podcast, brought to you by Blake, Clint, Jacob, and guests from Australia and around the world. On today's episode, we recap the first round of Legacy's League of Regionals from around the world, giving us our first taste of the emerging new meta. We discuss the decks we played in the Artificery TTS Season 4 League. We talk about net decking and the good, bad, and the ugly of it and whether it's healthy in a competitive environment. We also take a look at some cards that get a boost or get worse in the Legacy's meta. Also, look out for your chance to win a Maul's Lightsaber legendary card. Say thanks for listening and subscribing. Hello everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of Destiny Down Under. My name is Clint, and with me today are my Destiny Down Under co-hosts, Jacob and Blake. To kick things off, we'll give you, our listeners, a quick rundown of who we are. My name is Clint. I live in Sydney. Destiny is the first CCG I've seriously played. I've been playing since its release in November 2016, but only really started playing competitively halfway through last year's Store Champ season. I managed to pull out a couple of top eights and a top four, but always just seemed to miss that top two spot.
So I'm Jacob. I've been playing Destiny since it came out, pretty much, for the last year. My previous card game experience is playing competitively is Magic for quite a bit. That was before Destiny. And recently I've come out victorious in the ACT Regionals champion as well. Blake, do you want to take over?
Yeah, hey guys, I'm Blake. I won this event over in Melbourne called Nats. Got a little bit lucky. I've been playing, again, Destiny since it came out. Jumped from Magic as well, just like Jacob. It was really good timing, actually. Magic format was really bad. And then Destiny came out, and it was an easy switch.
Okay, we'll move into the first segment. We're just going to have a quick overview of what happened on the weekend. There were four regionals on the weekend with some pretty interesting result, I think, from what's been posted online. So first of all, we had an event in Madison with 76 players, and we had our first mill victory with Raikan Yoda Jedha deck, followed with a Elite Ayla, Elite Rose Ezra that was piloted by Taxter. So two new decks there that no one had really seen, or the Raikan, the Yoda, the Jedha was popping up in the previous few weeks but hadn't really made any traction. Then we've got Kentucky with 97 players. We see that Elite Ayla, Elite Rose Ezra deck pop up again that actually won that 97 person event. And then the second place went to Elite Po 2, Elite Hondo. San Diego, 96 person event. It looks like we're getting really high numbers on these events as well. Interestingly, we had another Elite Ayla, Elite Rose Ezra deck taking out that regionals as well, with the second place going to Elite Towson, Elite Kylo 2. And then we had a smaller 41 person event in Hamilton in Canada, I believe. And the winner there was Elite Sabine Yoda with a second place Elite Qui-Gon, Elite Yoda. So what do you think of those results, guys?
I think that's a really good spread. The Ayla Vehicles deck has definitely shown its strength now, and we can expect to see that a lot more going forward. But we still had, yeah, quite a good spread of decks. You know, we didn't have that one dominant thing like the last season. And I think some really strong players placed well. So that's something to take note of as well. I think that's where the format's kind of gotten to. The better you play, the better you're going to place. You know, it's not so just jam the most broken thing anymore. It's outplay your opponents now.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. If you dig into the data a little bit more, you can see there was around 12 different decks in the top eight between all four of those regionals, all different decks. But obviously, you can kind of point at the Ayla vehicles that kind of won two of them and placed second in another one. I think that could be a deck to watch out for coming up. Obviously, really happy for the mill player. There's going to be so many rejoicing mill players out there to finally get
good
one.
Good for them.
But also not surprised that Poe Hondo has kind of turned up again. It'd be interesting to know how many Poe Hondo decks there are, actually, based on last week's outcome?
It seems to have dropped in its conversions, though, like only one. You know, when last week it was just so dominant, they did put some numbers up for Kentucky as well. And it seemed to be played in quite high numbers. It just couldn't convert on that particular event.
Yeah, did you have some data for those numbers?
So I'm going to go through some numbers from Kentucky. Thanks to them for sharing all of this information. But you can see Poetu Hondo was the highest played deck with 17 registered for the event. Or three made the top eight. So it still did. Well, there was more of that in the top eight than anything else. But I think with so many there, its conversion definitely dropped from the weekend before. Maybe people are finally working out how to play against this. The next highest deck was we had 10 copies of Kylo 2 Talzin with only one conversion to the top eight. Still, that deck is – it's still fairly fresh. And I think that deck just comes and goes as the meta changes. And then, you know, with some typical decks that we expected, Epo 2 Eala, there were six copies of that. And then just a bunch more hero stuff. Let's just summarize it all together. We got heaps of Yoda, heaps of Poetu, even some old R2-P2 was there. But we had the whole top eight. We had three Po Hondos, one Kylo Talzin, one Po Eala, one Yoda Zeb, which didn't have too bad of a weekend. The Eala vehicles and, surprisingly enough, Qui-Gon Kanan.
You're kidding. That deck's still around, huh?
People still play R2-P2 and Qui-Gon Kanan? I'm
crazy.
Maybe these people haven't really received much legacies yet.
Yeah, maybe that's
perhaps.
It was only two Eala vehicles decks present. And so this is Elite Rose, Elite Eala, Ezra. Two present and one made the cut.
Yeah, so let's look into that deck a little bit more, because out of the four regionals, it was in three of the top eights, top fours, top twos, and it won two regionals. And I'd like to say this deck came out of nowhere, but it's actually been a deck that I feel like's been on the slow burn for a while, but no one's really picked up on it.
Yeah, so people just tend to follow the masses, right? And that's good. And then so what happened? A bunch of people picked it up, and then a bunch of people put it down. And then maybe they've all kind of realized, hang on a sec, this deck is actual the real deal. And it come out and proved itself this weekend. Maybe it's the answer to Hondo. You know, you've got these metas filled with Hondo decks, and really, it was Ayla's weekend. She absolutely dominated.
What's your thoughts on the Eala deck, Jacob?
Yeah, well, I think the three characters definitely gives it a bit of an advantage over Hondo, where you don't really have to worry about taking three damage hits early on. You can keep your resources to yourself, which I think is really important when you're playing against Hondo, especially early on. And if there's a lot of two character decks that are out there, which seem to be the meta largely, the last Empire at War, I think three characters as well just gives you a little bit more space to ramp up with those vehicles and really hit the road come round three. You just get a critical mass. There's been a lot more vehicles that have come out now with legacies. You can really put out some high damage numbers.
The thing about this deck is that you sit down across from your opponent, you put out your lineup of Eala, Rose, Ezra, and your opponent just looks at you like you're an idiot going, what is this trash? And then by round three, they're eating their words, choking on 15 damage, and there's absolutely nothing they can do about it because they've exhausted their turn in round three. They may have picked off Eala or Eala and Ezra by that time, and you've still got Rose sitting there. And all they're looking at is the bomber you've got out, the modified HWK you've got out, the Y-Wings, the Airspeeders, and then on top of that, you've got C-3PO to just basically set off this huge chain reaction of damage, and they get scared really, really
the
fast.
The deck is definitely real. One thing I've noticed playing against it is I think the mistake that I've made and probably a few people are making is you don't take it serious enough in the first couple of rounds, so then you just let them build up. Get to that round three, and with all the two character decks, the health pool isn't that big to deal with the massive damage that comes in that round three. you maybe pass for five turns, play your one removal spell, and then you take 15 anyway. I think if the meta adjusts to a certain way to beat this deck, we're going to see an influx of bursty decks just try and smash characters off the board as quick as possible. Do you think that's going to be the way to get around it?
Yeah, definitely. You really need to try and take this deck down before it gets moving. So like you said, bursty decks, anything that can pump out a lot of damage early in the first two rounds. But, I mean, it's hard to say who you really go for in this deck at the moment because it plays cards like Easy Pickings. So you don't want to leave Ezra around for too long, but then you're leaving two dice on Ayla and Rose. Rose is a moneymaker. Ayla does damage herself. It's a bit hard for your opponent, I think. It's going to take a while to figure out how best to combat against this.
And is this where we need to start going, heading back into this Poe Mars frame of mind where we need to start packing thermal detonators to deal with these three wide decks, like these three wide mill decks, these vehicle decks that are now popping up. We've got stuff like Force Wave that can now do 3, 2, and 1 damage. So your opponent's going to be facing 6, and then you get off the thermal detonator, which is another 9. Are we going to now need to start teching in these cards that do area damage just to be able to burst down these decks?
That's
really, really quickly.
I was going to say, it's hard to say because even though this Ayla Vehicle deck did well and the Raikkon Mill deck, those are 3 characters, you still have so many strong 2 character lists out there. So if you're going too hard on the kind of area of effect damage, you may get punished by these 2 character decks. But I know, Blake, you were mentioning earlier before the stream that you thought Balotic would be in a very good state against this deck. Like the old 5 dice.
Yeah, like if you've got that bursty deck and, you know, that and Mill, they're kind of preying on the decks that aren't bursting. Like they're preying on these formats. And if you just bring Balotic to that, to a format full of 3 character decks, he's going to have a field day. Obviously, it's all in theory. One other thing I want to quickly mention is maybe you don't even need to go mad with changing your deck. Just practicing your matchup. What I've started to try is, I'd pick my target. You talk about the Ayla Vehicles deck. Maybe my target's Rose for the particular matchup. I might start putting damage on Ayla first, knowing I want to target Rose, because then they're going to spend their caution or their illusion and put it on Ayla. I don't want to battle through that in round 1. So I'm going to switch to the person that I want dead anyway. So just kind of knowing what they're doing and adjusting your play can give you a big advantage there without having to go crazy and kind of warp your deck for one particular matchup.
Yeah, no, that's really smart play. If there's a way that you can get your opponent to play into your hands, then you're always going to have the advantage if you can dictate the way that the game's going to go. So like you said, maybe kind of faking to go for one target, wait for them to shield up, use their removal, and then switch to your original target.
In this particular deck, would Ezra not be an obvious choice, especially if you're talking about Balotic or just an aggro deck like Obi Mars that can easily put out 6 to 8 damage and take down a squishy character like Ezra. And then that way you turn off the easy pickings. You make garbage shoots a whole lot more painful for your opponent to play, because then they're going to have to either exhaust Ayla or Rose to remove 2 of your die, which effectively negates a lot of their resource generation. Maybe an aggro deck wants to take down the smaller character so they're more free in the later rounds or in the next round to take down Rose or Ayla.
Yeah, it's a tough call to make, though, by taking down the smaller character and leaving the 2 dice character alive. But if you consider things like easy pickings and into the garbage chute, like you mentioned, it could just give it that little bit more advantage or more incentive.
If you've got enough tools in your deck to kind of survive, like you're never going to just be completely in front. Like once you get to round 3 against Ayla Vehicles, they're going to have that big turn. But if you can survive that turn, you want to try and close on turn 4 before they get everything in the pool. I would rather try and close a game versus Ezra than Ayla. So maybe you kind of just deal with it, try and get someone off the table. And the early couple of turns of round four, maybe that's when you try and close, and you can put Ezra down really easily. You're going to be built up, but trying to put down Ayla, it's a lot harder. So they're going to have more turn on that critical turn of the game. They're going to have more time on that critical turn to get all their supports in the pool.
I think what will happen then, and this is something that I've been toying with the deck, is that once players start catching on to that particular strategy,
yeah,
cards like Deploy Squadron become a whole lot more valuable, because then on round three, rather than just slowly having to just roll out your dice and really extend the round out,
yeah,
you're rolling in all six of your support dice straight away. And that then becomes really scary. Like, there's a counter to it again. There's a counter to the counter. And that might be something that starts seeing play as well.
Make sure you don't play straight into the cautions and the illusions. Like, you don't want to just go head first into that on round one. You're going to get punished. And maybe it's time to bring some Bursey decks back, which I love. I love Django Veers. But I like these aggro decks. I'd rather make my opponent have the answer than me try and have the answer, if that makes sense.
All right. So why don't we have a look at the mill deck that won, the Raikan Yoda Jedha. This is, as you said before, mill players around the world are celebrating.
Yeah, Brian Lindberg is the mill hero right now.
Yeah, he's going to have a following, a new religion. Everyone's going to be making sacrifices at the altar of Brian.
Yeah, well, what do you think, guys? Is this going to be a real deal now? Are we going to have to start worrying about coming up against mill decks in top events? I mean, it came second last week, didn't it? And now it's come out and taken one.
Yeah, it did.
I think it's only going to get stronger once Rivals becomes legal and you get the Bespin Wingard in there.
Yeah.
Because that's always something that Hero Mill has always struggled with, and that's discarding from the hand. Like, you've got C-3PO, but like what happened last week, if C-3PO gets vandalized, then you're kind of just treading water there.
So traditionally, I've never been a Mill player. I've never touched Mill. I've always hated playing against it. And it's nothing that's really interests me. And I ended up playing that Yoda Jedha Partisan deck. Mill is actually really fun to play, I've discovered. But it's such a different deck to pilot. And instead of like going, okay, well, I've got to burst down this guy first, or I've got to take out this character to turn off this, it's like, okay, the deck has 30 damage. I just have to get that 30 damage down as quickly as possible. And the tools that these mill decks have now are just insane. As I said, I'm not experienced in mill, but playing it, I can see how people hate playing against it. And if it's going to see an uprising in
most definitely
this particular meta, there are going to be a lot of frustrated players.
Typically has struggled with that one more turn. You know, you're always just that one card short and they got to untap again and then they'll just finish you. I've always believed that Mill has to be a consistent turn four deck. Once you get to turn five, your health isn't you don't have enough health left. You might have a few removal cards, but every time I've played Mill, if I didn't finish turn four, I'd die in turn five. And that was that. Now they've got such strong tools. Finishing on turn four is consistent. Sometimes they'll get you on turn three. What we need to do again is start adjusting. You can't just play loose in the early first couple of rounds anymore. Like against Ayla Vehicles, you can't play loose in the first couple of rounds and let them get set up. Against Mill, you can't just kind of fluff about and let them get through three quarters of your deck. You need to start from turn one and just start bursting and just get characters off the board as quick as possible. I think that's the solution to these slower three-character decks right now.
It's interesting that the Mill deck actually came up against the Ayla Vehicles in the final and overcame it there. I mean, I think the Ayla Vehicles is probably just a little bit too slow to get out of the gates to kill those Mill characters. And as the Ayla Vehicle player, you're wanting to play your supports. You're not really wanting to hold them in your hand, which against Mill is kind of a bit counterintuitive. So you're helping the Mill player along and all of a sudden your whole deck's gone, and they just have to survive that one big turn, and they've probably got you.
Yeah, and then they've got, and this doesn't really affect Ayla vehicles much, but it will affect every other deck in the meta. This the Empire at War card, Fall Back, the 4-cost, which reads, each player may choose one upgrade, starting with you. Discard all upgrades from play that were not just chosen. That card is insane.
Yeah, because then on round three, I mean, obviously you're not taking out any players or characters as a mill deck, so your opponents just have free reign to just load up their upgrades. So a card like Fallback is just so necessary to help you survive just that extra turn, that extra round, like you were talking about, Blake. And I think Chance Cube is very big in this mill deck, because you need, you've got a lot of events and you're spending a lot of money. You really want to be making those resources early, and especially finishing off with C-3PO. If people start targeting Chance Cube with Vandalize or Rend, not that that's really coming back, but if they take out those target cards or the key cards, and I could see Mill struggling a little bit.
So who do you target first in this particular lineup?
It's a tough one, because if you go for Raikkonen, then he's just got the shields on the other players, on the other characters, and he's milling away. I mean, you're not going to go after the Partisan, so in my mind, it's either Yoda or Raikkonen.
Like, I watched the Portland finals. He went after Partisan, and it just gets him off the table. He has low health. In this particular deck, I guess it's different. I know I was saying don't go after Ezra, but in this, you go after Partisan, you cut off his mill, you cut off easy pickings, but you also cut off half of Raikkonen's ability. And then I would be trying to watch shields. Maybe you can just keep Raikkonen off, but I would probably move on to Yoda next and then just leave Raikkonen to the end. Unless they have 3PO, Raikkonen's not doing a whole lot at the end of the game. It just depends what you have out on the board. But like for me, I've gone after Partisan. I seen it kind of unfold in the Portland regionals. Just took out Partisan and just slowly moved on. I think he's actually the first target in that deck. Just cut him off. Just get it out. He's the easier target, but he also takes off Raikkonen. Like, if you just go after Raikkonen first, they're getting that trigger every turn until he's dead. And because he can tank, how many triggers do you want to give him? Like, I think if you go after him first, he's going to get at least three. If you take one out, maybe you can hit Partisan at the very start of round two, move on to Yoda.
Yeah, it's true, because if Partisan's got a shield on him, he's worth 2 mil a round.
Because sometimes they can just leave a shield on both of those support characters, and then you're forced to split the damage just to get the shields off because you're worried about that Raikkonen ability.
I think Partisan is the first target. But, like, again, maybe it depends on your deck and how you think your matchup is. Maybe you want to go after Raikkonen first. You don't want to get through the shields, and you want to try and get... He's got that focus too.
Yeah, I agree with getting off one of the support characters, but I think Yoda's more of a threat for the consistency. I mean, his dice and the special is essentially two dice worth.
I'm sure over the next few weeks of regionals, we'll see it play out a little bit, yeah. And people will form their own strategies to combat Mill, because a lot of people probably don't have a lot of experience against Mill either.
I mean, we had Raikkonen come out. Like, Raikkonen did well at the Australian Nationals. We had a gentleman that went 6-2, missed on strength of schedule, and then it got played a little bit in our local meta. It was quite good. Whether it's Yoda or Partisan, I think you need to target one of them first, and I think you need to try, if you can, try and play around Fallback now. Like, my go-to strategy versus Mill was load out. You know, like, load out as many dice as I can. When you get that big turn, once you've got all these dice, you just have that massive turn. You don't need a lot of rerolls, so you can start saving your cards. That strategy might, you know, you need to watch that. Now, if I just load out on turn one or two, turn three, they just fall back. You're like, oh. So some takeaways, you know, you've got to get the supports off and you got to watch Fallback now.
Another deck that it kind of came second in one of the regionals. And I know that it was quite a big showing in the Kentucky regionals. And that was the Kylo 2 and the Mother Talzin deck. Yeah.
That deck is doing well. I'm sure if you watch anything on YouTube or listen to podcasts, you've heard of this guy called Tiny Grimes. He's a massive following. He's done really good for the community. He had a really good showing with that deck. It made the top 8 in Portland last weekend. That's the one to watch. And it's kind of one of them secret decks where it's quietly defining the meta as you can't just rock up with any monocolor deck that you want. Mother Talzin, super strong, color two. He never went away. He just needed another pairing.
I think Mother Talzin and Kylo is just always going to be one of those gatekeeper decks out there. It's pretty annoying that Kylo 2 is hanging around because it shuts off the monocolored decks, but it's something to take into consideration. Just having a little look at the list that Tiny Grimes has posted up as well. Seems pretty standard. It's hard to say whether or not you go heavy into the Mother Talzin. If I do, then I'll usually go into the Holocron package and then the Chance Cube, and I'll have those two as my evens. And then you kind of just play Force Powers because you either get the Holocron or the Chance Cube and focus that, and that's how you get your Force Powers out. But I can see that Tiny opted not to go for the Chance Cube. So I wonder how he went for paying everything, because that's the issue. When you cut out the zero costs, then you become pretty tight with resources.
I think the deck starts to feel a little bit clunky as well, and you find yourself spending your Mother activation to look for a resource or to change something to a resource. I wonder what the thinking was to cut Chance Cube. Maybe it just gets removed too much. Maybe people know about it now and they're scared of it, so they just like remove it, and then you just spent one, you've used an activation, and that can set you pretty far behind. However, I think without the resource gen from that card or with Holocron, like, so now you're only relying on Holocron for your deck to operate smoothly. I think that's a bit risky.
I mean, also, how do you pay for Rise Agains if you don't have Chance Cubes in there?
Yeah, that's crazy. That's what I mean. You end up, you're going to use your dice now to try and find resources. You're going to use your Mother activations to try and find resources. And then how potent are you after that if you're giving up some of your dice to do this instead of getting damage out? He did have two copies of Kylo Ren Starfighter, which is very interesting. It's an even. I don't know if it's good enough to put that card as one of your evens. Great for the mirror, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's just too slow.
I'd prefer the Chance Cube over that one. But, I mean, still congratulations, because he made it all the way into the semis, and he came up against the mirror match.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested to see what his opponent's deck looked like, if it was going more into the odds. Or
that mirror sounds disgusting, I just want to say. Like, Kylo's going to hit, and your mother gets free reign, right? What do? Do you roll out first so you can get ahead on tempo? But then they know that your top card isn't odd, so they can blank one of your dice. That mirror sounds crazy. Maybe it's fun. Yeah. I don't know. We'd have to test it. It sounds a little back and forth to me. One thing that makes this deck really, really good is Witch Magic. Yeah. That card is like top five of the set. Maybe not top five, but it's very strong. And I think that's why you sacrifice your deck to get Mother going and to get Witch Magic. Like, if you're healing three.
Three for one is pretty stupid, considering Field Medic is one for two.
Yeah. And that's
but Field Medic's pretty good. So, just quickly before we move on, who do you target first there? Do you go Talzin or do you go Kylo?
Oh, I always want to get Kylo off the table whenever I'm up against him. I mean, depending on what my deck is looking like, but be flexible, see where they put big upgrades. Usually I'm thinking Kylo.
So me personally, I think you have to go Kylo as well. He's just a big threat, right? He's just always big. That deck can't tank as well, so it's not like you're trying to bash through this 12 health tanky guy and not get anywhere. You can probably get him off the board by round three, and if that's the case, I would rather try and close against Mother than I would rather try and close against Kylo. Does that make sense to you guys?
Yeah, definitely. I can see this deck bringing in Force Wave as well if the vehicles and the mill becomes pretty popular. That's an easy inclusion.
I think against a deck like this, especially if you're running yellow, Vandalize would really, really be potent against this deck. If you can just drop the Force Illusions, drop the Chance Cubes, if he was to add Chance Cubes in, you're cutting off the money. You're cutting off the extra health pool.
Yeah.
Vandalize will just wreck Kylo.
Yeah, that's true.
Card's just annoying.
If you cut off those Chance Cubes and the Holocrons, then good luck paying for anything.
Played Kylo Talzin before with Vandalize, watching them roll out a Holocron special and then just vandalizing it. I'm surprised you don't get table flips.
Yeah. I mean, watching them pay one for their Chance Cube and then vandalizing it after they've used their Mother trigger to flip it, Maybe that's why Tiny Grimes cut Chanceu from his deck. He's like, nah, man, I'm not playing this game.
Is it wrong that I troll people with that? Let them focus to the three and then vandalize them?
Nah, man. You get them. What you have to do, though, is tank for about a minute and then vandalize them afterwards.
It's a really tough decision, that one.
Okay, so how do you beat it? You play vandalize and you probably target Kylo first. We all agree with that.
And I think with the 2/2 sides on each of Kylo's die, easy pickings takes it out pretty quickly as well.
Yeah.
I feel like that's probably said for any deck now. Easy
pickings is a big threat. I'm actually surprised that's not a $10 card already.
All right, so with all of that said, sorry, I just want to chime in quickly. With all of that said, what do you play next weekend? Like, is Ailer Vehicles actually just the deck you pick up now? It's got good survivability. It's got massive damage. It's got the best hero yellow cards. Is that maybe the deck? Or do you go a step ahead and you play something super bursty like 5-die Towser now, and you just try and get ahead of that deck?
So I thought about this, and if this was last Friday, I would definitely be taking Ailer Vehicles to a regionals.
Yeah.
After the weekend, I think I'd go back to Obi-Mars.
Just get that one step ahead.
And I would tech against it with making sure I had the easy pickings, the vandalize, you've got the guards, like anything with wide removal. Yeah, I don't know, but I think the bursty decks and then being out, and Obi-Mars as well just manages to handle a lot of decks with its tankiness.
Yeah. Jacob, what would you play this weekend?
Yeah, for me it's pretty easy actually. I'm just going to be making those sacrifices, praising the Lord and going mill.
Yeah, okay. Oh, man, it's two converters. All right. Look, I think you'd be in a great spot to be like, it's done enough where it's caught people's attention, but they probably still wouldn't have had enough reps against it by the time the weekend come that you'd still just be so favored. If it was me, I would probably just stick to Poe Ailer. I've been playing that deck a little bit. I really, really enjoy it. I think it's like that 50% deck, though. I don't think it's great against anything, but I don't think it has a bad matchup either. It just has room for pilot skill. It's got all the tools. But you just have to expect that every game you play is going to be pretty fair.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next segment for what we were playing in the TTS Season 4 League.
We all competed in it. What were you playing, Blake?
So for the top cut, I registered Zeb Yoda. Yep. I died in the first round to Ailer Vehicles. I think this guy is maybe in the top four now, Nars.
Oh, did you play Nars? Yeah, he's through to top four now.
Yeah, so he played very well. I wasn't completely confident in my list. And this is like was a good learning, not a learning curve, but a reminder for me. I was really happy with my list. I tested it a bunch. And then the night before, I kind of just shit myself. I was like, oh, no, I need to change all this stuff because it's not built right. And then just put all this random crap in there. And then it was not a good list.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And then I should have just left it the way it was. You know, it was fine. It was tested. It might not have been the best, but I knew it. I was comfortable with it. And then I just kind of freaked out, made a bunch of changes, and died in round one to Nars, who was very good playing Ailer Vehicles. And that's about it for me. I played R2-P2 all the way through the Swift.
But have you played much? Have you played much Yoda Zeb outside of that?
No, I kind of sleeved it in a bit of tilt. You know, I de-sleeved it. I was like, this deck, whatever. I do think it's very good, and I thought it was very good then. But after that, I kind of put it down and start working on other stuff. You know, when you test for the TTS League, that's all you get to do, right? Everyone's trying all this new stuff, and you're like, all I need to do is pick a deck.
Mm.
So, so after that, I just kind of put it down and started working on some new stuff. I think it's very good, though, and we will see it start to do well. And that was it. That's me.
Yeah, it can definitely be tiring playing the same deck again and again, and then that's all you're focused on. So I know I haven't been able to make it to my locals recently, and I've just been playing my TTS deck, which is Ayla and then two Jedi Guards. And I found that deck to be pretty strong, to be honest. I'm not sure how it would stand up now with specials and Hondo coming up, because mainly you can't Guardian the specials, right? So, but the deck was, And I'll just say, I used to play a lot of control when I used to play Magic, and this deck has a bunch of control in there. With the Guardians, and then I play something like 16 mitigation cards. It's just crazy. And you just play the deck really slowly. You know, you just control your opponent's damage each round. You've got It Binds, so you're building up gradually. It's great against all the indirect damage decks out there as well, because three characters, you just split it across as you wish.
I wonder if swapping out one of the guards for either like Padawan or Yoda's probably, with all the specials, it becomes a little bit stronger with the Padawan or Yoda, single die Yoda.
Yeah, it's definitely something that I considered. I mean, if you look at the points, you can fit in a single Yoda, or you could switch out for a Padawan.
Yeah, something to look into. I mean, if Ayla Padawan's won a regional, I mean, there's no reason why there isn't a little bit of flexibility in that third spot.
I think losing the second Guardian though is pretty big. Like you can just hang around, because obviously you just build everything on Ayla, and then you leave your Guardians there just waiting to soak up some damage. But their dies aren't terrible as well. I mean, the plus two you'll usually link up with, the two shields is amazing.
Yeah, that two shield is very strong, right? That's very good for their cost. How did you go? Are you still in?
So I made it to the top 16 and then got knocked out by Yoda Zeb, which, to be honest, I was feeling pretty confident with that matchup. I mean, if you're taking a deck which has so much control as mine, and you think all you need to do is control Zeb's dice or the upgrade dice, they won't be doing any damage. But I probably didn't get enough reps and practice in, to be honest. And force speed was very, very annoying to get around my Guardians and my mitigation. So once Yoda had that force speed on, or two force speeds, and was able to take two or four actions, and my mitigation was pointless. So impulsive and one copy of All In, which I was thankful it wasn't two copies. They were the cards that I was obviously most scared about.
So impulsive is the card that I missed when I built Yoda Zeb first up. Kind of looked at it and went, oh, no, I don't need it, whatever. It's good enough. And then I think that's the card, like that and All In, are the cards that make all the difference. Because like you said, you've only got a small amount of dice that are actually dealing damage. And you really can't afford to have them mitigated.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Impulsive, that's the zero cost resolver die with ambush. So you're obviously just looking at one of Yoda's specials or the two focus, and then all of a sudden you're facing down six damage.
Such a surprise.
Yeah. He's pretty nasty if you can get him going. What is it? Is he a 1-2 and a 3-for-1?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So would you play the Ayla Guards again in like a local, or maybe if you had a kit event or something, you know, half decent coming up, would you register that deck?
I'm pretty confident in the deck, to be honest, but it depends if Poe Hondo, Yoda Hondo is going to be a big thing. Because like I said, against specials, that's a big weakness. Apart from that, in my locals and testing, I didn't lose very often. There was one game against a Maul and a Mother Talzin, which got off the holocrons and got off the chance cubes and got off force wave, and that was pretty disgusting to face against. Yeah, but I mean, if the meta was just standard damage, then I would feel very confident.
All right, that's good to know. Like moving forward, you know. It's nice to have this kind of selection of decks just on the side, that if your own meta shapes a certain way, that you kind of know what you can pick up and it's going to be well positioned.
Yeah, I'm not sure how the matchup is against OTK, because I'm not sure if that deck's going to become very popular, but it's a slow deck, the Ayla Guards, and if you're giving OTK time to set up, you don't have any real like disruption available. You just let them kind of draw into their pieces, and then they'll eventually just kill you.
I can talk a little bit about that. I played it in an event last week, but the one of us that is actually still live in the league, I'd like to know, how's that been going?
So I hit the top four yesterday. I'm playing Obi Mars. Really, I'm really surprised at how resilient Obi Mars has been, because I've played a variety of decks in it. First matchup was against Vehicle 4 Wide Hero. Then I played a Tarkin Sevens, and then a Qui-Gon Yoda. And then yesterday's match was against a Kylo 2 Anakin. And Obi Mars's ability to just turtle when he needs to, and then just spike 6 to 9 damage out of nowhere with stuff like Synchronicity or My Ally is the Force, is just stupid. I haven't been playing it as aggressively as maybe some other pilots have been. So I'll sit on stuff like My Ally is the Force if I can't resolve it, and then I'll just roll it out, next round, play it next round. I'll forego 3 damage to preemptively take 3 die off the board with guard.
Yeah.
Even if it means if I'm losing 3 damage, that equates to probably on average 6 damage by removing 3 die off the board.
Yeah.
So I've been playing it super conservatively and just waiting to strike when I get a good roll or, Mars hits. And I can hit, like, from round 3 onwards. Like, my opponents spent all their mitigation in the first 2 rounds, that they've got a limited amount of mitigation from round 3 onwards. And yeah. I can kind of get free reign from there on. So it's been working pretty well for me. The worst matchup, or the matchup I was most worried about, was the Kylo 2 Anakin. Considering that my deck is probably 95% blue.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, it's not. It wasn't a favorable matchup for me. and I went into the game with myself and Squirrel Bane. He's based in South Carolina, I think he said. We both had 0 reps against each other's decks, so we kind of went in a little cold. He just rolled really, really bad, unfortunately for him. And I said to him halfway through the game, I feel bad for you, because it's not a game then. It's just you just have to wait for me to kill you then, because yeah. When you're just rolling trash like 3 rounds straight,
yeah,
it's really bad. The second game was a little bit closer, but I managed to take down Anakin early round 2, and then it was just basically chipping away at Kylo 2 for the following 2 or 3 rounds. I wonder if Obi Mars is the favored deck in that matchup, because even though you're running, or I'm running, like a majority of blue cards, the fact that I can just activate, take a shield, it mitigates one of Kylo's damage. And then I've got stuff like Cautions and, Obi's got 2 shield sides. Maz has got shield sides. So I've got the flexibility there to tank up if I think I'm going to take a lot of damage, as well as the flexibility to burst when I need to as well.
So I think that's a really big strength of the Obi Maz. And, something like I was mentioning with Ayla Poe before is just having flexibility in your deck. If you need to tank for turn 1 or 2, start, chipping them away and just building your board, and then just being able to switch gears on turn 3 and start laying down the beats. Or maybe you just start early, but just having that flexibility to play the game at the pace that you need to is really, really strong.
Mm. And I think people with Obi Mars that have been playing it, I've noticed a lot of decks have got like Defensive Teaching and Ataru Strike.
Yeah.
People need to swap those out for My Ally is the Force.
Yeah.
Because My Ally is the Force wins games.
Yeah.
It's damage that comes out of nowhere.
It's so hard to play around.
Yeah. What about Ataru Strike, though?
I'm on the fence about Ataru Strike, because if you're playing against another hyper-aggressive deck, you're not going to be hoarding a lot of shields, because you're going to be taking damage to the face, which makes Obi-Wan's lightsaber a little bit weaker. It makes Ataru Strike weaker, whereas My Ally is the Force is online all the time.
Yeah, that's a fair point too. Like, seems like you only have a very small window to play Ataru Strike. Maybe if you finish with shields and then roll out and then hit, and then you kind of got to do it. Where My Ally is the Force, geez, that card is great at times.
Yeah. I mean, my ally as the Force does the same thing as a Taru Strike. You just don't have to have the condition of shields.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess it costs two.
You, my ally as the Force, a light bow special, and you've got two characters that are both shielded up. I mean, that's 10 damage there.
What a sicko.
Like, and I did that in a game, and he was not happy.
So are you playing Obi Saber?
I am playing Obi Saber, yeah.
Just one or two?
Just one. So okay. I'm playing two lightsaber pools.
Ah, sure.
The only two I'm playing of each is ancient lightsabers and heirloom lightsabers.
Yeah.
And one of everything else, and lightsaber pool just gives me the flexibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that card so much. When you're able to do that, you just play one of, yep. and then you get whatever you need at the time.
All the rest, I think I've got about 12 mitigation cards, 6 economy cards, and then 4 out-of-hand damage cards. So
just rounds out nicely.
Yeah. I mean, like, obviously our decks are locked in for this TTS league, but there's definitely some changes that I'd make, maybe 4 or 5 cards. Definitely add in easy pickings, definitely add in, like, a vandalize. I feel like friends in low places is probably essential here because your Obi die is so precious that you want to get rid of that mitigation before they have a chance to remove it. So
yeah, that's fair. How are you going with, like, people targeting, you know, Obi versus Maz though? Are most people going after Maz first, or are they trying to just slog through Obi?
I think the smart player will go after Maz first.
Yeah.
But, you know, some early cautions and some Obi shields, you can, like, I'm getting Maz through to round 3. So if I can get three activations off Maz, I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
And then Obi-Wan at that stage usually has 2 to 3 upgrades and 3 shields. So
yeah.
So he's at 15 health.
Yeah, he can close.
Yeah. But then you're relying on Obi doing Obi things, and sometimes Obi doesn't want to cooperate. So yeah, that's RNG for you.
Yeah.
anyway, so yeah, so I'll probably have to have my top 4 match next week. It'll either be versus a Hero Mill deck, I think, or a Kylo 2000.
Okay. So you feel okay with that?
I think I'd prefer to face the Hero Mill, but if it's if it's quite an aggressive Hero Mill, it might be a little bit taxing, and I'll have to be a little bit more conservative with discarding to reroll, etc. like that. So,
but then they're not getting Maz off the table, so you've got that consistency built in.
And I might just be able to go round to round without having to worry about discarding to reroll, and just if I can prevent the bleed of Mill, I probably have a better chance there. Kylo Talzin will be a little bit more aggressive, so it'll be lots of shielding up and trying to dodge frightens, etc. like that.
Yeah, that card's pretty savage.
It is the anti-hero card, that's for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Do we need to move to the next segment? But obviously, like, well done on getting to there so far. And probably taking it out, just saying it here now.
Yeah. we'll see. At the moment, on the other side of the bracket, there's another Obi-Mars. So it'll be interesting if it's an Obi-Mars mirror finals.
Oh, nice. yeah, for sure.
Obi-Mars at all the next regionals.
we better move on because I think we're running out of time now. We're just going to talk about we've sort of been talking about the decks we've been playing already. One subject that's come up is net decking decks for competitive play. It's been quite controversial in the community. Some people say it's fine. Some people get sick of seeing it. What are your guys' takes on it?
I think it is a necessity. Like, I will often spend a lot of time researching what's been happening, you know, what's been winning, what's been doing well, what people are talking about, and then I'll build those decks, not necessarily to play those decks, but I know that everybody else is going to be playing them, so I need to know what's happening, you know, what they're doing, where they're strong, where they're not. So it's more of a way for me to actually kind of get ahead of the meta. Mm-hmm. Is to just net deck, build the decks, see how they play out, and then kind of work around them. I will never once take, you know, an exact card for card deck to an event because every meta is different. So if something wins and you test it and you go, fire out, I love this deck, it's really strong, it's got all the tools, you know, and then I'll tweak it kind of for my own meta And it might be 5 to 10 cards worth of tweaking. But in any competitive card game, you have people that are very good at building decks. And if these decks come out early, they are going to define the meta. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think there's something wrong with just straight net decking it, playing it at your event and not understanding it. I think, yeah, just straight copying it is not healthy. But I definitely think net decking is a thing that's real. And I think we should do it. Like, we should play these decks to see how they work, because 30% of your next tournament is going to be the deck that won the last weekend's tournament, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Like,
yeah.
I think, you know, if we're looking at, let's just use Hondo Po 2 for an example. I'm sure that's going to get a massive showing at any of the regionals this weekend. What's important, and this is probably what differentiates a skilled player and someone who just plays casually, like on a big scale, is someone who just goes, I don't know what to play, I'm just going to play what won last weekend, gets in, just goes in raw with it, gets no reps against anything, and they have a bit of a whinge because they lost.
Yeah.
Like, just not net decking and taking a top deck is going to guarantee you a good standing, like, within the competition. You know, the guys that are there grinding out games or have been playing decks for a few weeks and know the deck inside out are going to be the guys that are sitting at the top of the tables. Yeah. I mean, me personally, I will see, like, I'll jump on the database or whatever and see what's popular, or I'll have an idea for a pairing and I'll go have a look and see how other people have built it. And I might even go, oh, I like the look of that. Chuck it on TTS, throw, like, have a few games with it and see what I like and don't like. Because, I mean, realistically, all the decks are 90% the same, bar about 4 to 6 swing cards that are a medical.
Yeah.
Like, and so every deck is net decked at the end of the day.
Yeah. There's only so many cards, right? There's only...
Yeah.
And then even if you look at... I think, you know, is agreeing with what you're saying. Like, if you... All of the decks that I build at the moment... I'm taking 6 to 8 cards out of one deck and just putting it straight into the next deck.
Yeah.
Because you just have this kind of this group of really strong cards for each different color.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you just look at Blue Hero, 20 of those cards are going to be the same in every Blue Hero deck. Like, no doubt. So
I wish I had, like, 6 copies of Ancient Saber and Force Illusion, and because I'm sick of changing them from deck to deck.
Yeah, exactly. What are your thoughts, Jacob?
Yeah, I think you guys covered it pretty well. Just the fact that net decking is always going to exist in any popular card game, it's pretty unavoidable. I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all. There are some people that deck building isn't really their forte, and that's fine. Maybe they just prefer to play the decks. They can find the decks online. It's pretty much up to the individual. You're always going to, like what Blake and Clint were saying, it's going to be tough if you just net deck a deck and take it to the tournament without any reps, without any practice. I think it's always going to be doomed for failure. And just pick up a deck that you like the look of, play it a bit, tweak a few cards here and there. Yeah. That's usually my go-to strategy for finding decks. Like, it's a valuable resource to have the database out there and to have everyone posting their decks online. It just gets the community thinking about different ways to play the game a little bit.
Yeah, and it's no disrespect to people who put in the time and effort to build something from scratch. But I think, you know, life gets in the way as well. You know, not all of us can spend
just grinding 12
hours
games
a day just building Destiny decks or... Yeah, grinding games or anything like that. So this is like a fast track to finding what you like, what's your unique play style, and just modifying it to your unique play style.
I find that a lot of the time I will pick up a deck, and this happened with Nats, this happened with R2P2 after that, where I'll pick up a deck, I'm just trying to learn it and play against it and then work out what do I want to do with it. You know, like, how can I beat it? And then I just can't get there. So I'm like, all right, this deck is good. You know, and then by that time, you've played like 50 games with it trying to beat it, and you're like, oh, whatever, I'll just play it. It's so good. Like, you can't get... I mean, that's exactly what happened for me at Nats. Like, I tested so many decks and games against Kylo FN. I couldn't find something that, you know, was good against that and the rest of the field. So I just played Kylo FN. Like, it was, you know, did I net deck it? Sure. Someone else built and played that deck. But I had my own version. I tried a lot to beat it. And it just came down that that was the best deck. And if you're playing in a competitive event, like, if your goal is to win, then what do you do?
I mean, and if we look at your R2-P2 deck, Jacob, that you won the ACT regionals with, what, you had maybe you something different you did. Did you stick in one lightsaber pull? What else did you change in that?
It was pretty much the mitigation that was changed around. Yeah, okay. There was a big inclusion of It Binds All Things that came from the previous regionals.
Yeah.
That wasn't in the first iteration of the deck.
Yeah.
And that was really big for the deck, I feel. But then the changes were all about the mitigation suite, the removal. And that, I think we were having a discussion a little bit before recording this about how it's so important just to change your removal suite depending on what you're expecting to face against.
Mm. And that actually segues quite well into our next segment about, you know, competitive card discussion and what's getting good and what's getting bad. Looking at legacies coming into the format, I think before recording, we were talking. Sound the Alarm is a big one, which a lot of people were including in their decks. Which now, with all the specials flying around, it's lost a lot of its inherent value, I guess you could say.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that's going to shift with how the meta changes and what you're going to be facing up against. I was never really the biggest fan of Sound the Alarm. It's amazing for zero cost and can definitely save you from sticky situations that you just normally wouldn't be able to get out of. But the randomness of it was just always so tilting for me.
I feel like that was the general consensus of Sound the Alarm, though. Like, no one actually ever wanted to play it, but they felt like they needed to include it as even just a one of, as a get out of jail free card if someone just god rolls you.
I agree with that.
Like, yeah,
but what do again you do? If someone god rolls you with specials,
what do you do?
Yeah, what do you do?
I played in a kit tournament last weekend. I actually played 7th OTK. I went up to 2 Sound the Alarms in that only because of our specific meta. You know, we have quite a lot of blue villain melee decks and blue hero melee decks. And I just was like, no, man, I'm not getting nut rolled by somebody. Like, it feels really bad when you play your best and you feel like you're playing really good. And then someone just rolls out like 12 damage. And you're like, well, now what do? I remove one dice, you know? However, with the shift, I think it definitely gets worse. I wouldn't disregard it completely. I would just look at your own meta and see, like, if you are filled with, you know, Poe Hondo decks, then sure, you don't need it. But if there's still a bunch of, you know, Blue Hero or even Maul decks, people still, you know, they have a love for Maul. You don't want to just get blown out by that one nut roll that just kind of costs you the game.
That's exactly right. And it does save you. I feel like I went out to Good Games Epping on Thursday night, and there was still there was still quite a lot of damage dealing decks, but I wasn't concerned about them enough where I felt like, man, I really wish I had Sound the Alarm in my deck. Like, I faced a Kylo 2000, a Palpatine, and an Obi Mars. And I just think there's probably better mitigation cards.
Yeah. The truth is, I played in the Tuesday local before. I played against Palpatine. He rolled out double threes and a 4 on Force Lightning. I have one removal. And I was playing 5 Dark Towers, and he pretty much just, he put so much damage on me that for the weekend, I was like, I'm not taking this again. So I put 2 Sound the Alarms in my deck.
You know what Palpatine hates?
Easy pickings. Yeah.
Easy pickings.
For that. I mean, maybe that's just a better get out of jail free card now, because, like, if they are nut rolling you, they're rolling the same symbol and the same value.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah. That easy pickings card, like, I was watching the Good Games Bondi stream the other night, and I was watching Will play a game, and Will was playing, I think he was playing Poe Hondo, and their post game discussion, I can't remember who he was playing or what he was playing against. I think he was playing against Dave, and Will was talking about easy pickings, and he kind of reflected the sentiments that I had about it. I was just like, this card is trash. Like, who's going to play this card? Like, it's so conditional that when are you ever going to get the chance to slap this down and go, haha, I'm removing two of your die. That was my first thought of the card
too.
Man, I've used that card so much. And in a specials meta, that card worth its weight in gold.
Yeah, so as a whole, like, you know, sound the alarm, easy pickings, you know, even things like deflect, overconfidence, there's quite a lot of removal at the minute that you need to just, it really just depends on what you're expecting to face. We are in a new format, you know, like I started putting two overconfidence back in my decks because I actually liked it versus Tarkin's Sister. You know, you can get a reroll, you can keep them off, you know, having that same symbol, remove something. So I would adjust and put two of them in, and now I'm kind of like not so high on them. I think it all just, you just got to watch your meta and then make sure your removal kind of lines up. Like, you don't want to be that guy with two sound the alarms against a field full of Po Hondos or, you know, stuff like that. Deflects and then you just get paired against Obi Maz, you know, for days, and you're like, oh, this is not good.
There was a Discord user, I think it was Tybrid. He mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and I think the guys at the Jedi Trials mentioned it in their podcast as well, that looking at the cost of mitigation, like we're kind of heading to a point where when we're paying one for a piece of mitigation, we want to affect two dice. We were talking just before recording about Electroshock, and Electroshock is great because, you know, you can hit specials and all that sort of stuff now, or anything less than two, but you're spending one to remove one, and then you've got the condition of having to spot a yellow as well. Whereas if you look at something like Easy Pickings, it's still the spot yellow, but you're removing two potentially big die off the board.
Yeah, I think I agree with that now, actually, now that you've kind of said that. Like, my Poe Ayla list, I don't really have any targeted removal. Like, I play two defensive positions, two force misdirections, and two guard. Like, they're because they all hit multiple dice. And then that way you don't... Like, I'm finding I don't want to have my deck kind of full of removal. You just want that one turn where you just blow them out and then just pile a bunch of damage on, and then you move to the next turn, and that just puts you ahead in the game.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. That's fair. And I was looking through the folder the other day, and another card that I thought might actually get a boost with Legacies based on that formula, like you want to remove two die for one cost, is Quick Escape. So Quick Escape is remove up to two dice showing damage. You must pass all of your future turns this round. Now, in Empire at War, you would not play this. But with all the aggro decks that are coming out of the gate, if you can hold on to this, like, it doesn't have a spot yellow condition. Like, the only condition it basically has is that it has to show damage, the dice, and you have to pass all your turns. But if you've exhausted all your turns, let's just use Obi Mars for example. Like, by about three or four turns, I've done everything I need to do. Like, I've dumped my hand for rerolls, for mitigation, etc., like that. And if all I have to do is just pass until I can play Quick Escape, all I'm doing is really giving them the battlefield. You know, sometimes that's a disadvantage. Sometimes you don't care. It's not a huge deal, and it will be matchup dependent.
Yeah. I think sometimes giving up the battlefields, that can be pretty crucial, though, but especially when it comes to the later game, because you're going to be in a situation where you need to roll out first and kill their character before they do the same to you. So, I mean, in saying that, then maybe you just wouldn't play this card late game. It would be more valuable in like the early to mid game, where you don't really care about giving them control of the battlefield. But it's also important to note that this doesn't hit specials, which might be something to consider if the meta shifts to that.
Yeah, that's very true. And I wonder if I might try it out myself, but one of these plus one easy pickings might be a nice little balance. In theory, it sounds like it works well. In reality, it just might not.
Have you got two easy pickings in your deck at the moment?
Outside of the TTS tournament, yep. I do. And I've also got Vandalize, which is making a big wave at the moment.
Yep.
So anyway, I think we're running out of time now anyway. So next time, maybe we'll just have a look at how Legacies... we might have more of an idea of how Legacies is shaping the meta, so we can... Can have a chat about what we think is going to be very impactful, how Overseas is impacting our meta, or maybe or how different our meta is to.
I think we've talked through some pretty good meta. Points today, though. Like, you know, having flexibility in your deck is quite important, and then even that net decking, that small segment, like. The guys that are winning events aren't the guys that are just net decking 30 cards. Like, they might be playing that best deck, that meta deck, but they're tweaking it. So, like, the best thing you can do is just follow your own meta game, see what people are coming up with, and make sure you make those necessary tweaks to whatever deck it is you are playing.
So let's finish it up there. Thanks for your time, guys. So we're going to be doing a monthly podcast. We're going to try release it on maybe the first of every month or something like that. We'll just look at the month in review. We'll post some contact details in the podcast write up. Anyone you guys want to give a shout out to or mention?
Yeah, I guess just shout out to the Bondi crew, the Desk friends. You guys have always been there for me. That's the team that I play in. Good games, Bondi Junction, my local store.
Yeah, shout out to the Bondi crew. they were. Will actually smashed me in the round one of Nats, and I was like, oh my God, what have I done with my life? Yeah. And then, thankfully, he carried me into the top eight by giving me good SOS. So shout out to you, Will. good games, Cannington. Good games, Cannington. They're running some really good events lately. Really putting a lot of work into building the community, which is really big for us. All we want is just to get more people out having fun and just enjoying the game, and they're really stepping up to that, so good for them.
Yeah, I guess I'll give my local good games. I usually go play out at Good Games Epping, which is managed by Almo, the New South Wales regional winner. I'm usually out there once every couple of weeks playing. Also, I think we should just mention the Hyperloops. We're all Patreons of the Hyperloops, and I feel like just ever since joining the Hyperloops, my game has massively improved to a point where, like, I feel like I can actually play competitively now and do semi-decent, because I've only been playing competitive games for a year. And I think just in the last 3 months of just all their podcasts and videos, etc. like that, my game's improved drastically. So if you're looking to improve your game, go sign up to their Patreon, and I can guarantee that you guys will get a lot better as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I've quite a lot to thank to them, guys. Always just coming up with new stuff, putting the time in. And there's not a lot of content out there, so just having a source for content, like, you can just log on and be like, all right, there's a bunch of videos I can watch now. We just don't have that except for in that Discord.
Yeah, that's the content is great. I mean, Joe, Bobby, and Nick, I mean, they put in a lot of hours, and I mean, they do it all out of the love of the game. But shout out to Joe, Bobby, and Nick. Thanks for all your hard work. As mentioned at the outset of the show, we want to give you the chance to win a Maul's lightsaber legendary card. Here's what you've got to do. You need to head over to our new YouTube and Facebook pages and hit the subscribe and like buttons. Then leave a comment on both pages with your name and the answer to the following question. What card does Clint want to try out in his Obi-Mars deck? Each like and subscribe will gain you an entry with a limit of 2 entries per person and is open to listeners around the world. You can find the links to our pages in the podcast description. We'll announce the winner on our next podcast.
All right, sweet.
All right.
So I think we'll close it up there, guys. Thanks for your time, and we will catch everyone in a month. Thanks for listening. Hit subscribe and know what you think.
Thanks, guys.
See you guys.
Yeah.